I'm Laura Oppenheimer. This is Sexy Data Solutions for Public Transportation Systems. The sexy is bracketed because I'm not sure how sexy it's going to be, but hopefully it'll be interesting, and we'll all learn a little bit about how riders can help bridge the gap between information from public transit agencies and the people who need the information. I'm going to have everyone introduce themselves, but before we do, I'm hoping to get a little bit more information on who you guys are so we can make sure to give you information that's interesting for you. So we'll do a quick raise your hand exercise. Raise your hand if you're a commuter who regularly takes public transportation. Okay. How many of you are like urban folk? Okay. How many of you work in transit or an agency or some sort of government thing that might find this useful from a professional way? Okay. And then how many of you are developers? Good. Cool. All right. So I'd love to ask you all to introduce yourself and say what you work on and what problem you're trying to solve with your approach.
Okay. Hi, my name is Eugenia Chan. I run a website called Muni Diaries. So for those of you who haven't been to San Francisco, Muni is our public transportation system. And our website is a mostly user-generated site. So it's for anybody who rides public transit in the San Francisco Bay Area to contribute a story, a photo, or a news tip. So we've been around for 4 years, and basically we're curating life on the bus. So whether it's some gross story someone smells or I witness an accident, so that's what we do.
My name is Brian Ferris. I'm a software engineer with Google, and I work on the transit features in Google Maps. So we have, you know, transit information for hundreds of cities around the world to get from point A to point B, and I work on a lot of that data and those issues there. Before I came to Google, I was in Seattle. I was working with the One Bus Away project, which is a suite of open source tools for transit rider information, really focusing on real-time information, and which is now used in a number of cities across the U.S.
My name is Ravi Pina. I'm a network engineer for Mozilla, although professionally has no relation to the @Caltrain account that I created, which is for the commuter rail service in the San Francisco Bay Area. It's a crowdsourced service where riders can communicate transit delays, service disruptions, etc., as well as the bike car configuration. And it's all user-driven and not official from the Caltrain Authority.
Good morning. My name is Amy, and I work for the Champaign-Urbana Mass Transit District. And it's okay if you haven't heard of us, but we're located south of Chicago, and that's where the University of Illinois is. And we're a smaller agency, but our ridership is disproportionately large. So we're able to do a lot of really cool things. So I do all the social media there. I do public outreach, a lot of engagement, and help communicate what our software developers do, because they're not very articulate. So I'm here to defend public transit. So let's go, Laura.
Awesome. So I think, you know, it's easy as a rider to complain a lot about the information that you get from your agency or why you don't get information. So Amy, I'm curious, I'm hoping you could start us off with just talking a little bit about how your agency works and what the challenges you guys face, how you guys are organized or staffed, and so we can get a better insight into you know, what we as riders are sort of raging against, if you will.
Yeah. So it's really important to remember that public transit is funded by the government, that essentially we're a government agency, municipality, like a school. And so that means things go through a lot slower, and we need to make sure that we're following all the regulations that we don't control. As far as funding goes, it's very different. The federal government provides some funding depending on your size and if you have a what are called BRT, bus rapid transit, or there's different things for rail. And then states should put public transit agencies in their budget. But of course, politics gets involved, and how much funding public transit gets can vary every year with the budget. And finally, on a local level, transit agencies are funded very differently, and it's surprising. Some get their funding from gas taxes. Some get them from sales tax, so that makes the funding varied. We get ours from property taxes. So we have a district, and if you live within the district, part of your property taxes go to us. And finally, how agencies are structured, we're very understaffed. And one thing we were discussing as a group is that people, you know, how do you spend that money? Do you put more money in your operations? Do you put more money in your training? Do you put more money in your software development? So I think that that's a challenge that every single transit agency faces differently and focuses on different things. And I'd encourage all of you to learn how your transit system is organized, because it's very unique.
Thanks. Eugenia and Ravi, you guys both sort of have crowdsourced approaches to getting information out. I don't know if that's the words that both of you would use to describe what you do. So can you talk a little bit about sort of the approach, Ravi, maybe even just from the technical side, what you put together, and then also what your relationships are like with the agencies that you sort of help get information out about?
Sure. So not to overly be boring on the technical side, but it's using a group of open source tools that leverages infrastructure that I own and interfaces with Twitter primarily, which is obviously everyone knows what Twitter is. I don't have to explain that. And the idea behind it is as a commuter or someone who's riding Caltrain, you can send an email to an address that I have, and then it will redirect that message to the @Caltrain feed and the @BikeCar feed. If you subscribe for SMSs from Twitter, or if you're a Twitter client, we'll push that alert to you. You can get on-the-spot information about the train that's there or not there, as the case is. As far as my relationship with Caltrain and the Joint Powers Board, it's non-existent. I was solicited, funny enough, unofficially by someone on the San Mateo Transportation Authority, which is part of the consortium that Caltrain is part of, and he actually asked me if he could submit updates. Like, he was basically asking me for permission to use my service that I was providing because they couldn't do it themselves. So it's an interesting situation that I think I'm in. That's unique because the authority is very deficient, and they try at times, but it's not where it should be at all.
So I think for Muni Diaries, we're like the social curation layer of all the data that's out there, all the conversation that's out there, talking about transit. And I think our role is to kind of wade through the noise. And I mean, everybody complains that the bus made you late, but they don't tell you where, or if there's an accident or something like that. So I think we wade through all the conversation and we pick out what we think would affect a lot of people. And our relationship with the SFMTA, which runs Muni, we're an independent website, but they obviously read our website, and they'll, whenever we get a tip, we'll call Muni, we'll call SFPD, and we'll fact check. So it's not like, you submit something and it goes up on the site. So I think our relationship with them is more journalistic, but they do call us whenever they would see, a complaint or a post that gets a lot of comments, and they just want to make sure they're kind of ahead of what people are talking about on the site. So I think it's very similar to what a reporter might have.
Okay. And I think one of the things that's interesting, at least about Muni Diaries, is you guys started as sort of more of a storytelling platform, right? But as you've grown, you've become sort of the de facto source for what's going on with Muni, because you can work faster and you're more sort of focused on it than maybe the general SF Chronicle or other sort of professional news sites. Would you say that's true?
Yeah, I think most of the time when we get a news tip, it's about at least an hour before we see it, like at the San Francisco Chronicle, or we get any emails or communication from the SFMTA. And I think we have that freedom because we are a blog and we're really user or customer focus. We're coming from a writer perspective, but I think the fact that we've been able to build this community is because we tapped into the life on the bus aspect. We have a lot of funny stories. We have a live event, so we're entertaining. So we keep people kind of focused and keep them, entertained in this community, so that whenever something does happen, if they have a news tip, they think of us as, a source to contribute. So it is a community in every aspect, and it's fun.
Ravi, do you have challenges with people like submitting incorrect information to @Caltrain, or how do you sort of police that community when you allow people to just sort of update things ad hoc?
So when I started the service, I wanted it to be to really empower the passenger to provide the data and not really step in and editorialize or sanitize any of the data. we're trying to help each other, and I put a lot of faith in ourselves to provide accurate information, not misleading stuff that's on my website, or at least for the service. You know, I kind of list some outlines of what I consider newsworthy. Trains that are, you know, 1 or 2 minutes late isn't really relevant, but if it's 90 minutes late, that's very important. Fatalities, putting things in context for why trains are late. Periodically, though, you know, there's some misinformation, and a lot of the times the community is self-correcting. You know, it's all anonymous from the Twitter feed. You don't know who's actually posting the data. I mean, I can see it from the back end, but a lot of the times, if someone puts in correct information, someone else will either make a correction or they'll correct it themselves. And it doesn't really happen that often. I mean, the community is really passionate about the service and trying to help each other, which is, I think, really fantastic, so that you don't really run into any of those really issues. At least you have small flare-ups every once in a while.
Yeah, I definitely will notice people will correct each other, and they'll say, you know, you need to say what direction the train is going. You can't just say train 258 is late. You have to say northbound or southbound and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and on the site as well, I try to as a commuter, there's some jargon that we have as far as designating which certain trains, and Caltrain themselves encode this type of service and the direction of the train based on the train number, and that's not published at all. It's just something that people kind of figured out. So I put that information on the website as well to help people use shorthand as much as possible, because when you're looking at it, you don't want to have to read a lot of information about why your train's late. You just want to skim it and be like, oh, okay, well, you know, I can work for another hour or whatever the delay might be.
Awesome. So, you know, moving sort of more into some of the developer work that you do, Brian, can you just, or any of you actually, if you want to talk about, when we talk about data and how we communicate data, what are we actually talking about? Is it stories? Is it times? What kind of data do you work with, and which direction is it flowing, I guess?
Sure. I mean, so transit is a really data-heavy space. When we talk about all the schedules and routes and lines and real-time information, you know, those are sort of naturally able to communicate that through sort of data systems, you know, machine systems. And we talk about some of the challenges Amy mentioned about resources at agencies where they don't necessarily have the manpower or the technical expertise to sort of build tools that can use that information. I think the developer community has really stepped up to sort of, you know, consume that transit data and build like a sort of rich suite of applications for riders. I think transit data has been one of the big open data success stories that we've seen, that, you know, a couple of forward-thinking agencies about 5 years ago started putting out their schedule data, the real-time data in various formats. There's been some standardization around that, whether it be the GTFS spec for schedule data and some new specs around real-time data. And we've kind of seen sort of app ecosystems bloom all across the U.S. and increasingly around the world, where developers have access to the information. They can build iPhone apps, they can build real-time systems, they can build websites that, you know, provide that information to riders in ways that's often very useful to them. And I think that's been a big success story, because it allows, you know, agencies to sort of transfer the risk of development, of trying new things, from the agency, which is, you know, historically sort of a risk-averse sort of place without a lot of resources, to developers like all the people sitting in this room who can do really innovative things that, you know, sometimes they work really well, sometimes they don't, but more importantly, they can try those things and make them work. So, you know, I think that as much as those standards around data and the agencies willing to provide data in those formats has really helped in that space, we're starting to move, traditionally it was scheduled data that we started with. We're really trying to get into standards around real-time data now. So everything about delays, cancellations, service delays, alerts, so that we can really push targeted alerts to people and build applications that consume that in a standard way. But there's also data that comes back in the other direction. I mean, I think we talked a lot about, you know, the sort of crowdsourcing element. How can information flow back from riders to the agency? And that can be, or from rider to rider, you know, about alerts, delays. It can also be about errors in data. I think we've seen a lot of success with, you know, the riders who are using these tools see every day that, oh, this bus stop is in the wrong place on the map, or this schedule isn't quite right. They can often identify those errors before the agency can, mm-hmm. and send that information back to the agency so they can improve their own systems. So I think it's a two-way information flow, and I think there's, you know, challenges on both sides in terms of not overwhelming the agency with the amount of reports coming in, making sure that the reports that come in have useful information. If a rider says, oh, my bus broke down, you know, being able to know what route, trip, direction, so that we can push that out to systems is really useful. So I think there's a lot in that space that we can do to help, you know, continue to work.
Amy, do you, what do you do with reports from riders as you communicate out to the greater ridership? Like, if someone writes in and says, you know, or tweets at you and says, you know, the bus isn't here and it's supposed to be here 15 minutes ago, how does your agency focus on getting that information out or taking it in and using that to help improve services in the future?
There are lots of ways that people can report stuff to us, and one of the things that all transit agencies say is no matter how many staff people you have or how good you have, your riders will always find errors, and they will always figure out things that you will never spot. And that's why transit agencies need riders. Someone tweeted us a bus shelter was coming loose, so the glass was in danger of falling. And he tweeted a video that showed us exactly where it was. So when our technicians went out to fix it, it took them half the time because they brought all the right tools, they knew exactly where it was, and they knew exactly where it was on the shelter. And so for someone like me, when I get tweets, I send it to the proper department. Is it a maintenance issue? Is it operations? And also facilitating that conversation. We love using FormSpring, which is who Laura works for, because they can ask us questions about service or things that they find wrong or they don't understand, and I can have a really long explanation that someone else can find. So that's... we need you to talk to us, and I will, and your agency should find people who can then share that information with who needs it. But it's just about connecting riders to the system and then the system disseminating that information within itself.
Great. So as a developer, and Robbie, Brian, this is probably for you, what are the challenges in working with either public transportation data or an agency? I mean, Robbie, you work more independently, but you spoke a little bit about, you know, scheduled versus real time, and there are various sort of different formats coming in. How do you sort of coalesce all that or figure out how to work with it?
I mean, I think we try to do what we can to help the agency sort of wrap their heads around some of the technical issues. I think the reality is that even as much as we do to try to simplify, you know, the models for data, it's a complex subject, especially when you get into real time. And so I think both my work in Seattle and increasingly at Google is focusing on, you know, on these data specifications and building tools for the agencies to help them, you know what is that data look good? Are there problems with it? Increasingly, a lot of the tools that the agencies use on the back end will kind of natively support this. I think back in the day, transit was a very sort of siloed, you know, space where, you know, a couple vendors provided all the tools and, you know, everything from the back-end scheduling systems to the front-end systems that the agencies used were all provided by one company, and it was really hard to get data out of that system. And it was a kind of, you know, it didn't breed a lot of innovation as a result. But now as more and more agencies are like, hey, we want to be able to send our data out to developers to do things, we're starting to see, you know, more native support for that where an agency can just press a button and, you know, spit it out and go. And that's great. That's ideal. But I think that, you know, there's challenges with agencies who will put out a schedule feed and they're like, okay, I did it once, I'm done. But, you know, schedules change. You know, they need to maintain that. They need to be able to listen when riders say, hey, you know, the schedule data wasn't quite right, or this data didn't quite look the way we expected it, you know, to have this sort of process. And it's challenging because, it requires more, you know, manpower on the part of the agency, you know, resources that they might not have originally budgeted for a project. But I think usually what we're seeing for a lot of agencies, they recognize the value of putting that data out there because they just get so much back from the community and sort of all these different applications that they wouldn't have been able to write themselves or would have cost a lot of money. And, you know, they're increasingly finding ways to fund the person whose job it is to manage that data and to get it out there. And it often improves their own systems when they do kind of have that focus on the data, because it's getting a lot more eyeballs on it than it ever had before to sort of improve the quality of that data.
Yeah, and I'd like to add, too, if where you live, your transit agency isn't active on social media, every transit agency has a means to get them information. And a lot of times you get angry because something's wrong and then your experience is negatively affected. But that will not fix the problem. So there's emailing, there's the basic ways to get the information out that you as a rider are responsible for.
Well, I think that's kind of where we step in. A lot of transit agencies, they don't have someone like you, Amy, to really look at what people are saying. And, you know, if you're tweeting about a problem about public transit, you need someone to tweet it to. And if you think the Muni or SFMTA is not tweeting back at you, you don't know who they are, and you have this other community to turn to. So basically, they needed someone to tell the problems to.
Yeah, I think, Robbie, one of the things I see with the Caltrain account is that people don't realize that you're not the real Caltrain. So people, all the time in the Bay Area, you'll see people like really angry at the Caltrain account because their train hasn't shown up, and not realizing that they're directing their anger at a, you know, a community of like nameless folks who are updating this from the back end.
Yeah, I mean, periodically to see a train wreck, pun intended, I'll look at the mentions for Caltrain or even at Bikecar, and the amount of infuriated passengers is quite shocking, and it kind of echoes the reason why I created the service at all. But I created the service basically out of selfish needs of wanting to solve, you know, standing at the platform for an unpredictable amount of time without a train, and I realized it's helping a lot of people, and I'm clearly not the only person who's experienced this problem. And, you know, I wasn't naive to think that I was the only person, but to really see that feedback that probably otherwise should go to a representative like you for Caltrain it's misplaced energy that the Caltrain agency is kind of missing the mark on, and there's a lot of data that they could be using. And also to the point of data collection. So while all of the data from my feed is crowdsourced and user-submitted, the San Francisco Bicycle Coalition's reached out to me because I inadvertently collect the bike car configuration. So as a bicyclist and a commuter, Caltrain provides certain train sets that have very finite capacity of bicycles, from as low as 16 to as high, I think, as 80 or so up to recently. And if you're a commuter who rides a bicycle like I was at the time, and it was only a 16 capacity car, and it's at the start at San Francisco, so if you're familiar with the Bay Area, San Francisco and then 22nd Street, there's a large number of bicyclists that get on there, you're bumped. And that means that if you have a meeting or if you have a scheduled anything, then you're going to have to wait for the next train. And the sister account bike car allows the bicyclists in particular to provide the bike car configuration. So then SFBC reached out to me as part of their campaign to get Caltrain to take more action, because you're infuriating riders who are very loyal, who will bike in the rain and must ride Caltrain, to kind of lobby them. And they wanted analytics of, you know, the statistics of, you know, which trains typically have which configurations at what times. And, you know, I'm able to pull that data out. Even, I mean, it's all, you have to interpret the data, which is kind of why I kind of coach people to use the certain shorthand, so it's a lot easier to parse. But I mean, that's one aspect of utilizing that data, which was a success because Caltrain listened eventually, and they increased their capacity from 16 eventually to 32 to 40 to 80, and it's definitely helped the bicyclist community significantly.
I just want to touch on something Robbie mentioned. I think for people who are in, you know, transit developers or just doing civic app development in general, where you're building on, you know, open data from government agencies, it's important to recognize that your app will probably, you'll be blamed first for, you know, prompts from the incoming data from the agency or from other issues. And you kind of take the role of Amy. You start to become the customer support person who then, you know, tries to filter that information and get it back to the agency so they can, you know, improve on that. I don't think you can expect to just create an app and have it go out there, because I think there is a lot of customer support you have to do to build off that data. And, you know, when people report problems, it comes to you first, and you have to figure out, is this a problem with my app? Is this a problem with the data? How do I route? If I'm building on data from, you know, 5 agencies or 100 agencies, how do I figure out what was the actual data source that created this? So, I mean, which is not to try to dissuade you from getting into the space, because I think it's super critical, but it is, you know, recognizing that it is a two-way street. It's not just pushing data out. You also expect it to come back in as well.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen several apps, which, especially for Muni in San Francisco, where the apps will be very forward and say the map data is old and you really need to refresh it, otherwise you're probably missing route changes and advisories that otherwise haven't been published. So yeah, it's an interesting position to be in. Unfortunately, like I'm not really exposed to that level of scrutiny.
Well, we actually had we got mad at developers because before we released our API, which many transit agencies have done and more are doing, which is exciting. Before we did that, though, people were scraping our data. And so they were putting out apps and using our logo. So when the apps wouldn't work, they would angrily say to us, "Your app sucks." And oftentimes the language was a lot more vulgar than that. And we didn't have any control over it. But we listened and we recognized that there was a community that wanted this. So we had an app challenge and we had 24 submissions, which we're really excited about. But we're very nervous. A lot of them are students. So what happens when they leave? So we're taking a risk. We have two software developers on staff that, you know, worked with the community and are doing updates and are very conscientious. But you know, we put all that money into that, and if those developers get bored and they don't care about their app when they graduate and they get the job that they want, that's a risk for us that we're pretty scared about.
I mean, I was one of those grad students who wrote an app in Seattle and then left Seattle, and a lot of people were upset about that, but I actually made the choice to go to Google because, I, you know, when you talk about trying to build sustainable transit applications, I think that is a big concern for a lot of agencies, and it's a big concern for both transit and just civic apps in general. You know, who maintains it, who keeps it going a year after the app contest, 3 years after the app contest? And you know, I think there are increasingly, as we find ways to write an app once and run it for 100 cities, that makes it sustainable. That makes it possible to run a business or to, you know, support a company that can use data, you know, whether it be transit or anything else in that space. But I think it's the big sort of nut to crack. Like, how do we make this sustainable? How do we make agencies comfortable with the fact that they don't have the control of that data? And I think, you know, agencies can do a lot to say, look, you can't call it the Caltrain app. I mean, I think it's amazing that you got the Caltrain tweet, but being able to separate the agency brand from the application brand is a big step so that, you know, the agent, you know, the writers will blame the app developer and not you when it's, you know, there are the app developers write bad apps too. So it is a challenge, but, you know, I think we're trying to start to kind of figure out some of these issues.
Yeah. And the crazy thing, when I started it, I didn't realize it was going to take off as well as it did. I mean, I had no, in my wildest dreams, I thought maybe my colleagues at you know, my 300 person company I was at the time would use it, maybe, you know, word of mouth or whatever. But, you know, with their 250 or so active contributors and 8,000 or so people following, say, you know, even if half of that are actual humans and not bots, that's still remarkable. And I realized I was really on the hook for a public service, and it was kind of inadvertent when I was on holiday in London, and a friend of mine messaged me and said, "Hey, Caltrain's down." I'm like, "What do you mean?" So, you know, hop on, and there was a power failure in the data center, and eventually I look, and, like, you know, there are like 50 or so emails. There, it happened. It was like a perfect storm. There was some just service disruption, rain, fatality. I mean, it was horrible. All these emails are backing up. And I'm like, well, people are directly reaching out to me as if I'm, you know, I'm their source of information. And it made me realize that I actually have to have an SLA for a free service. And I have to treat this free service like I treat, you know, the infrastructure I do at Mozilla. It has to have, you know, an actual SLA. And, you know, a hobby has become a little bit more than that. And it would be awesome if, you know, Caltrain would have reached out and be like, maybe we'll use our money and we'll do this for you. But
yeah, I think it's absolutely true that whenever you are working in transit, you're taking on this advocate kind of role or customer service. I mean, we started our website as a community of, you know, storytelling, but we started getting these really long letters that people had actually submitted to the SFMTA. They didn't hear back, so they wanted us to, you know, ask it, the SFMTA what's going on, or they're like, can you publish it? And whenever next bus is down, like, we hear it first. So I definitely feel like we take on this unofficial customer service kind of role. And now, like, the SFPD will come to us and say, we captured this video of an iPhone theft. Can you put it on the site? Did anybody see this? So I think our community has really evolved, and they see us kind of as their connection to the agency. So we're kind of helping them in getting their complaints heard.
And especially with Muni Diaries and Caltrain Diaries, unlike the Caltrain feed where, I mean, I try not to have editorialized tweets, and I really step aside from all that. But, I mean, I think you create a platform for people to express their frustrations to that hopefully can make it to the official system, and, you know, representatives on in the agencies then can see really an unfiltered feed of data that, which I would imagine is the most helpful, instead of someone, you know, writing a letter, you know, maybe not being as crass as they normally would be, because, you know, the true emotion really, I think, drives change.
I'm wondering if you can sort of address something that Brian and Amy, you guys both talked about a little bit, about third-party developers versus sort of developing in-house. I guess Google's a massive third-party developer, we would say.
We're a little big.
Yeah. But, I mean, Amy, you have software developers on staff, but you chose to go with a third-party app. You had a competition. Can you just sort of talk through that process? And Ryan, you made a third-party app before going to Google, just sort of how that was received.
Sure. Let's see, where to start. So InIT, which is Innovations in Transportation, they provide the technologies and the software that enables us to get real-time information. So that's part of our data, but then there's, you know, all the layers with the shape files and all this. So first we had to get InIT to allow us to do an export that would work with GTFS, which didn't
exist. What's GTFS?
That's Google Transit Specification.
The General Transit.
Oh, that's right. That's right. It's changing. Now it's general, which I think is really cool. That didn't exist before. So that seems really basic, but GTFS is just, you know, Brian's and Google's vision is that this will become universal, right? So that's what we wanted to export our data from InIT is through the GTFS. So once we did that, our API just became so robust. I mean, it's bus stop lookup, it's trip planning, it's actually watching your bus progress. And developers, we knew that they would get really excited about that. And so people have to get a key and they accept a million terms of service, most of which that says, you know, MTD is no longer responsible, this is your business now. And so that's just been a lot of outreach and getting people aware of it. But it doesn't erase the challenge that some populations aren't interested in it and think it's a waste of our time.
I mean, I think agencies kind of face a couple fundamental choices when they, you know, they embrace this idea of open data. And a lot of it kind of deals with giving up control. I think agencies are used to being in the position that they are the sort of fundamental source, the source of record for, you know, their system, for information about the transit system. But I think the reality is that riders are increasingly want to access transit information in a variety of ways that agencies just can't provide. I mean, they want it on their phone, they want it integrated with some other tool that they're using to find a restaurant. And I don't think agencies are ever going to be able to fit in that space. It's just not, they're really great at running transit agencies, and I think that's an important role they play, but maybe they're not so good at writing iPhone apps. And so when you open up the data to third parties and you do give up a little bit of control, you kind of have to hope that the third parties will do the right thing of keeping their apps up to date and having them correct. But the great thing about apps in the third party space is that consumers, the people who are actually using these apps, are really good at telling the good stuff and the bad stuff. If this is an app that hasn't had its scheduled data updated in a year and has flaky real-time data and, you know, is just like doesn't look all that great, writers are going to hammer it in their app reviews. They're going to go find the good stuff. They know how to find the apps that are actually useful. And the end result is that as an agency, if you put this out there, you know, there's that initial sort of investment in getting public data out there. You know, these app ecosystems will sort of develop. They'll sort of bloom. I mean, you can look at a lot of the major cities in the U.S. that have done this sort of work, and you see both apps from local developers, increasingly apps that kind of come from developers who've written one app and now want it to work in, you know, cities across the country. And I think that, you know, the standards, you know, whether it be GTFS or some of the real-time standards that we're trying to work on, have really helped make that possible. So I think, you know, for an agency, it's about giving up control. But if you go talk to the agencies who have, you know, release their data, I think what they've found is, you know, they're initially worried that, you know, people are going to be writing bad apps that were broken. They're going to be writing apps that kind of pointed out you know, all the buses that were late, as a, you know, to kind of like make fun of the agency. But what you find is that people write apps for riders that are useful, because that's what riders want. And we've seen that time and time again across agencies, really sort of innovative apps that just really help riders, because that's the thing that everybody really cares about, is getting on the bus every day and going to work and building apps to support that. So I think a lot of those sort of getting over those fears is hard, but I think it's important to look at the agencies who've gone in this space and had so much success with it so far, when, you know, from an agency perspective.
So now I'm curious. So I think we're all in somewhat of a privileged space being here at South by Southwest. I'm guessing everyone here has a smartphone of some sort, or, you know, a laptop, and is very tuned in, connected at all times. What can people who, you know, have access to technology, developers, you know, people who run blogs, Twitter accounts, et cetera, what can they do for people who maybe don't have a smartphone? Or how can we use the technology that we have available to us to help improve sort of communication for ridership as a whole?
I have a dream. All of you work in different places. You work with different populations. We need advocates. You know, some of my industry peers might disagree, but I love the premise of the diaries, because you guys can talk about that the bus is stinky, that the guy next to you smells like he's drunk and it's 10 a.m. We can't talk about that because, you know, that's like the disgusting reality of public transit. But public transit is also beautiful in its essence. So we need advocates to work with people at the library if they have an email address. Maybe you create what are called e-panels, where you collect people who give their email and they say, hey, if the transit agency has a question, I'll take a survey. Gathering people, senior populations, disabled populations, students of all ages, right, who would ride, we need you all to come to us and be our advocates and do some of the legwork for us to collect data, because data is sexy and we need it to move forward, frankly.
I would say there's a couple different ways. I mean, when we look in the transit app space, you know, it's true that a lot of us are writing apps for the latest smartphone. And one of the things we struggled with in Seattle for the One Bus Away project was, how do we reach all those people without app phones? You know, just even doing something as simple as SMS, you'd think, oh, this would be great. And it kills me, because SMS is actually super expensive to operate in practice. Like,
yeah,
we've seen so much, you know, the cost of writing software and deploying it gets cheaper every day. And then there's SMS, which is like, this is the sort of technology that we can use to reach a lot of these people who don't have the latest smartphone. But it's still pretty expensive. And I think there's some innovative stuff coming in that space, but I'm look forward to the day when SMS has kind of gone away, and that may still be a while. And then, of course, there's people without phones, period. And, you know, what can we do for them? And, you know, it's true that when you're a technologist, everything, you know, you've got your technology hammer and everything looks like a nail. But, you know, I think there's innovative stuff with being able, you know, like deploying these sort of real-time signage. You know, ideally every transit system would have a nice LED sign at every stop that tells you when the next three buses are going to be there. The reality is that deploying those are really expensive. But, you know, you can kind of cobble together some open source software and an old laptop and, you know, stick it up in a coffee shop window and reach a lot of the same, you know, have some of the same sort of effect at, you know, like a fraction of the cost. So I think there's, you know, creative ways of thinking about how can we leverage technology to reach the people who don't have any sort of technology in their pocket. And then there's a larger issue of just sort of civic engagement in general. And I think there's been a lot of great panels from some of the people even in this room talking about, you know, using software for civic engagement to reach out to people who might not otherwise be, you know, caught up in a, you know, survey, or, you know, how do agencies kind of take in the opinions of everyone, you know, and using software to reach those people in ways that maybe we haven't before. And I think that's a harder problem. I mean, it's easy to write an iPhone app or a cell phone app for transit, because everybody catches the bus every day. But those larger questions of like, well, where do we deploy this transit route? And, you know, those problems that are going to affect you over the next year as opposed to the next 5 minutes, I think those are some really challenging problems, but I think they're the really rewarding ones if we can solve them.
Yeah, I think running a website about public transit, we're definitely really hyper aware of the fact that there's a large population who rides public transit who don't read blogs, perhaps don't have a smartphone. I love the idea of real-time signage, but what we've done is that we're taking this online community, this online platform, and we've turned it into a live event twice a year, or 2 to 3 times a year, where commuters can actually come to our storytelling event and tell stories about what happened on the bus. And we've had, you know, BART operators who come on stage and tell stories about what it's like to drive the train, and we've had writers come up and just creating this real-time, like real-life conversation that came from an online platform. So I think that's kind of our solution.
Yeah. Also, See, at the risk of being overly simple, we're in a culture, such a digital culture, and where you're at a bus stop or a train stop, and there's at least someone who has an app that's telling you, real time data or some type of data, but everyone just keeps their nose down, and no one looks at anyone, and no one shares any information. So, when I started my service, I would be trying to feed it and make it useful, and I'd just share the data that I was getting with just people on the platform and just talk to one another. And, if someone's looking around, they're exasperated that there's no bus, and you know why, you share the data. I mean, it's all the data that we're talking about here is intended to be open. But that doesn't mean that it's just open to the developers who want to then release it. I mean, it should be open for everyone in verbal communication as well. So, we can span the entire spectrum of this data openness from verbal communication to the actual live streams that the transit providers offer.
Now getting sort of to some of the larger picture questions that hopefully will be helpful for you, you all post-panel. What can riders do if they live in a city that doesn't have data available to work with? Like, Brian, what do you, at Google Transit, if you are working with a public transportation agency, and whether you're Google or you are a rider or you're an app developer, what's the best way to sort of get that conversation started or start actually finding ways to make that information available?
It kind of depends on the agency. I think there's a lot you can do just to, again, start the conversation, kind of figure out what they're, you can be that sort of active, I guess I would say, start by becoming like an advocate for your agency. I think the experience I had in Seattle was that when I started working with with riders and trying to help, improve the experience for riders, it gave me an in at the agency where I could come talk to them about, okay, what is really going on inside? What is your data experience? What can we do to try to get data out? And you can have those conversations. You can point to a lot of different tools that are increasingly available to help agencies produce scheduled data, real-time data, to try to reduce the burden on them from a technical standpoint. And then there's some place, and sometimes that just won't work. I mean, there's just some agencies who don't have the resources, don't have the time, or don't have the technical expertise. There's increasingly a lot of systems that are trying to crowdsource everything. I mean, I look at like the Tiramisu project or Roadify or some of those other apps in that space where, the agency just can't afford to buy a real-time system. But, everybody's got a smartphone. Can we use that to bootstrap a real-time system? Can we use that to kind of build the scheduled data from on the fly from scratch? So I think there's a lot of cool ideas in that space, and I think it's going to require a lot more of these sitting in our pockets to kind of pull, make them work. But we're getting there. That's the kind of direction we're headed. And so, where you can help the agency, provide some expertise there, I think that's great. And then, there's some cool stuff we can do just kind of on the fly without it.
Yeah. When your transit agency has to make changes to the schedule, they're required to have some sort of public hearing. And these are the saddest events. It's just people who work for the agency and nobody comes, except like the person who is mentally challenged, who's a rider, who just wants to meet the people who work behind the scenes and say hi. So please come to those events. See what your agency is proposing and talk to them. And if you want to, if you have an idea about something you can provide with your talents, engage in that conversation. Talk to them face to face, because sometimes that's the best way to get these people. And I love the idea, we've started doing this, and this is something where you guys can help us, is lots of coffee shops and universities have screens inside, LCD screens that just have rotating information. We've designed for them bus information, because they'll catch the bus right outside. We have a development team who can do that, and we have the resources, and we're very lucky, but some agencies don't. So if you can just design a square for them that then feeds in data, that would be a great resource that would bring the transit information to everybody. So that's one example of how you can share your skills.
And then I think last question, and then we'll take some questions from you all. What lessons sort of from the transit space can be applied to other areas, whether that be community building and via content or app development, open data? What can folks who aren't necessarily in the transit space learn from what you guys have all done?
I think for us, the biggest lesson is that you really have to put yourself in the shoes of the community. I think our success comes from the fact that all the editors at Mutiny Diaries, we all write transit, and we really come at it from a perspective of this is our community, that's blow up the party talk and talk about what's wrong with our system, instead of, you know, like, here's me feeding you information, I'm the editor, and like, this is what you need to know. Like, we're really, really curating a conversation. We really tell our audience every day that this community is not possible without you, and like, you have to speak up and like tell us your experiences and your stories, and you really have to tap into what they have in common, because I think in any city, anyone who works in public transit can probably attest that it's really difficult to organize a writer's union because they don't really have anything in common aside from the fact that they want the bus to come on time. So like, what else can you tap into that really unites them? And for us, we found that it's, you know, the everyday funny stories and like entertaining like tweets and stuff like that that really keeps them engaged. So I think the lesson for me is like really understanding what keeps a community together and like really see yourself as a part of them.
I would say that, you know, there's kind of a couple lessons I would take. I think it used to be the lesson was about, well, how do we convince agencies to open up their data or to open up to more civic engagement through social media or other formats? And I think those are still important conversations, and being able to articulate that when you're in a new city that, you know, hey, these are the reasons that I think you should open up your data or maybe open up to civic engagement. And look at these cities to say that this is a good example of, you know, people have had success with that. I think the good news is a lot of agencies in a lot of cities are starting to say, hey, yeah, we get that. This is great. And, you know, I think the next step is, well, then they don't have any staff to actually make this happen. So what can we do as a community to help them, you know, to, you know, tackle some of these technical issues? And again, I think we're starting to, you know, really in the thick of trying to make that happen right now. So I think the lessons we've learned from transit kind of apply to all these sort of, you know, open government, civic app hacking, all that sort of space. I think we fought those battles there, and we're starting to fight them all over again with a lot of other different data sources from cities. But, you know, look at the lessons we've learned there, and, you know that it's possible. It just is going to take a little bit of time.
For me, it's more of realizing that if there's a problem and you're frustrated about it, don't just hold on to it yourself. I mean, you look for means of solving the problem because if you solve it for yourself, you're solving it for many other people. And if you don't have the technical expertise or the resources, like I was fortunate to have, then go to your transit agency, participate in open meetings, and be vocal about the issues that you're faced with, because, you know, I'm sure there's some statistic about, you know, if one person speaks up, they're really speaking for 100 or 1,000 people in the community. And the more people who show up, I would imagine that the more that the agency would actually have to listen and hopefully take action on the problems that are being presented to them, and, you know, as small to the large ones.
Yeah, I would say it's twofold. It's partnerships and it's customer service. Recognizing who your customers are, where they are, and what their needs are. That's every single industry, and I think the challenge that tons of panels here are trying to address. And I think partnerships with communities can enable you to do so much more, because you can reach populations, and one person who speaks from one community can then represent that group. And then if you could just get 5 people from 5 different communities, I think partnerships have endless power.
Great. I think we have time for some questions. Do we have a microphone, or we can just shout out because it's pretty small in here. Can I go?
I was wondering if you guys were aware of anything like GTFS that is service area oriented rather than route oriented. So if you have, you know, church buses or volunteer shuttles or other non-route specific transports that have a service area that then overlap with
I think it's certainly true that GTFS doesn't deal well with sort of ad hoc, you know, paratransit or shuttle service where it's not like a fixed route sort of service. And there aren't, I would say there's not a good specification for that style of data now. That said, you know, the nice thing about GTFS is it's a community-driven spec. You know, I even before I worked for Google, I was able to get changes pushed through for, you know, data, you know, completely independent. And I think, you know, we as a community of transit developers, you know, it's all about finding problems we want to solve, and let's say, hey, we've got some data, let's find a way to model this and let's make it happen. So I'm happy to talk more offline about, you know, what we could do to try to model some of those situations.
That's a cool idea. Yeah?
I'm curious what data there is that these kinds of apps have changed transit behavior, increased transit usage. And if there isn't data, why isn't there data? And if there isn't data already out there, at the very minimum, how has these respective services, how has it affected your ability to scale up your own?
I can speak anecdotally, mostly as a user of Ravi's service. So for those of you who aren't familiar, Caltrain is like the commuter train that goes from San Jose to San Francisco. And when there's an incident or fatality, the whole system basically stops for about 90 minutes. So as a consumer, I know everyone I know who follows this Twitter account, if we see that the trains are stopped, it's like, okay, I won't leave work for the next hour and a half, right? Or I will get a ride instead of relying on the train system. So I think, that's a small example, but I think certainly the data around stoppages changes patterns and behavior pretty significantly.
So I would say I did my PhD work on trying to measure that exact thing, and it's a tough problem, but there's a number of studies that have found that I think the biggest impact you see is just in rider satisfaction, and that's a clear win that riders are just way happier when they have this information. Even when the news is bad, your bus is 20 minutes late or it's canceled, it just really improves the quality of life for the riders. I think the bigger question, one that agencies often ask, is, well, does it actually improve ridership? Do we get more riders? And there have been a couple peer-review studies that try to measure the impact of real-time systems. I think there's one from Chicago that just came out recently, a TRB, that I think did a really good job of kind of in a controlled way measuring this. And the good news is there is an impact and it does increase ridership. Maybe the bad news is it's not a huge spike. And I think what you see is that it's sort of a gradual thing over time. You'll see a sort of subtle increase in ridership. So, it's certainly true that adding a real-time system, real-time capabilities or better communication is not going to spike ridership tomorrow. But it's obviously something that's usually relatively it's a cheap way that you can really improve the quality of life for riders. So, there is research in that space, and I think we can always do more.
I'm going to try to hit everything that you said, but you said a lot. So to start, I think we've had real-time information since 2003, and we've had ridership growth every single year. Part of it is that we're in a university town, so there's always going to be students there. So I would argue that it does increase ridership, but not hugely, which I guess isn't an argument. But I think you have need versus choice riders, and everybody benefits from the real-time information, but it may not convince the choice rider. So maybe they trust the system more, but I think conversations and things like the diaries that acknowledge what transit is and get people's fears. I talk to people so often who, they're kind of thinking about riding the bus, but they're scared. They don't want to look stupid. They don't want to ask questions. And so I think talking to people and being like, hey, I ride the bus. I ride the bus to work. Don't we live like two blocks away? Trying to have that conversation. And then if there isn't data, why? Transit agencies, it's a money game. So do you invest your money in bringing all of this data when your buses are always late or you need new buses and you need to replenish your system? I think that's a challenge. Foothill Transit, which is huge in California, is getting real time next year, and it's amazing the priorities that agencies put into various things, but I can't say why.
Well, I think there's such a great need and a desire to have better apps. I don't know that it would increase ridership in like San Francisco in particular, because I think a lot of the riders are need riders, but a lot of app developers approach our website to say, can your audience be our beta testers? So like essentially we have like thousands of people who would who could test your app. And whenever we do send out a tweet, oh, do you want to test this app? And everybody is just so enthusiastic about it. So I think definitely it's improving like rider satisfaction, and people are so hungry for just better information about just their transit experience.
Yeah.
Robbie, you mentioned that you encourage the people who tweet and send you tweets to use a shorthand, mm-hmm. so that you can get some structured data, mm-hmm. and draw larger conclusions over larger sets of data. Are there any
efforts like that to collect structured data by the user-generated diaries, user-generated transit diaries? Any other efforts like that?
Aggregating the data from...
Yeah, you know, so if the people who are submitting information to the transit diaries are submitting it in a structured way, it would be easier for developers to access, draw large conclusions, or make apps, you know.
I think people are really nervous about submitting their information. We get a lot of a lot of people say, why do I have to tag my Clipper card even if I have a monthly pass? And they get really, really nervous about their personal privacy. Like, what is SFMTA collecting about me? Like, they know where I'm going, and I think so. The answer we got from SFMTA is that it's like they wanted to count how many writers they have. So I think people are extremely paranoid when it comes to that.
Yeah, I mean, there's a certain level of I'm not paranoid, but I'm very mindful of my personal identity and being tracked. So even though, in order to mitigate abuse and spam and to track those issues, I issue unique keys to participants who want to update. So no one can just, you know, arbitrarily send an update. You have to explicitly request a key and receive it. And so, in essence, I can track that information. But I don't use that data as on a personal level. It's more just an aggregate of data to utilize for, you know, the SFBC, like I mentioned before. I haven't really explored a larger aggregation of that data because unless you have a structure, like a really rigid structure for providing those updates, you're subject to lots of interpretation of that data. I mean, it's natural language, basically, and being able to interpret natural language, I mean, no one's cracked that egg yet, and despite Google's attempts. But so I use just simple tools like regex to pull out certain keywords and the values that I ask for, and then I try to massage that data. And, you know, there are going to be outliers and things like that. So I guess in a way I do, but, you know, you have to be careful of the data that you get from it because, you know, you have to actually sanitize it in a way.
I mean, I was going to say one of the things we did in the One Bus Away project in Seattle is that when we had the report a prom feature, it was integrated right into the app. So, you know, the user would submit a prom and it would just be free text, kind of like we're used to. But it also included all the metadata about what stop, trip, route, time of day, you know, anonymized location, which made it really easy, a lot easier for us on the back end to figure out, okay, what was the actual problem? You know, were they, you know, was it the issue that they did in fact miss their bus, or there's no real time, or maybe they were at the wrong stop and they didn't realize it? And I think, you know, you can do that within the app itself, the transit app. It is a lot harder for just like a raw tweet or an email, but I think it is a kind of interesting idea for, you know, transit app developers in that space.
Although, so one of the things I did explore heavily when I started the service was to create an app that did have the rigid structure that I was mentioning, but from a user experience, a UI interface, I mean, it would be a disaster. I mean, you want people to communicate however it is that they're able to, and they don't, I mean, to basically force them to use the structure that might be foreign to them would not make this open to them to use. I want, you know, the most inexperienced user to be able to provide a tweet to the most experienced user. And what's the middle ground on that? And that's why I settled on email. I mean, email is kind of like the universal method of communication. So I thought it would be the simplest way.
I think we have time for one more question. I think you had raised your hand earlier. Yeah.
I can briefly mention that. I mean, historically, there's a number of vendors in this space who've kind of provided, you know, CAD-AVL, so computer-aided dispatch, automatic vehicle location systems. And, you know, they're kind of expensive, you know, one-off systems that there's not a lot of competition in that space. And there's like four or five vendors who provide most of the systems in the U.S. I think as, you know, GPS and software has become cheaper, we've seen a lot of sort of interesting solutions of, you know, just sticking a phone or a tablet on a bus, and that becomes the interface. I was lucky enough to be the software I wrote in Seattle. Actually, the One Bus Away open source software is incorporated, is now being used by MTA for their real time bus tracking efforts for, you know, all of Staten Island right now, and they're hoping to expand that to the rest of the city. And again, this is an open source solution where they're just sticking the hardware on the bus, and, you know, we wrote all the tracking algorithms, and they're open source. So I think there's, you know, a lot of traditional vendors in the space, a lot of opportunities for, you know, using technology and lower cost software to provide cheaper, easier solutions for agencies who need it.
And it's not just plug and play. We are always dealing with our real time going down. And we have staff on site who have a knowledge and who can help, but oftentimes the vendor has to come out. And just this past week before I came here, our stopwatch is what we call our real time information was down. And we had to wait until somebody from Init could fly somebody out to get here. And then he works through the night to fix it. But our hands are tied, and we look terrible when that happens too, because I can tell them it's not our fault, but they don't care. So I think that's a challenge and a resistance that agencies have is you have to have a company that you can trust and that you can really dig in when radio quality goes bad and you don't know why, or a server reboot isn't enough to fix it because it's intricate.
Well, thanks everyone for coming, and I think people will be able to answer a couple questions afterwards if people didn't get their questions answered on the panel. Thanks so much.
Thank you.